All right, welcome in. It's another edition of the Morning After Podcast. Hans Olsen, Scott Gerard, Lloyd Cole, as we break down everything we saw yesterday. Gentlemen, how about that University of Utah? Is that where, should we start with Utah?
Should we start with the collective amount of sleep that all of us have gotten?
Yes, we'll do that.
Sometimes the morning after is way too early in the morning.
I am so tired. I mean, I'm
between that and the lack of sleep and the lack of downloads, it makes me not want to do it at all.
Our ROI on this thing makes me think we're making bad life choices here.
And by the way, Scotty, I know that you got a few tweets this week. I got a few tweets about it. People wanting more Lloyd Cole for the Morning After podcast. So I'm going to sit back
and stop it. You just knock it off.
In fact, you know what, Lloyd? I'm going to go back to bed.
Okay.
I'll just let this thing roll. And you
so
just,
basically what you're telling me is you want to completely submarine the download.
Well, the bar's not set that high right now anyway, so.
Oh, yeah. I think we should start with the positive. And Utah was awesome, man. They were so good.
So when I left the stadium last night at Allegiant Stadium, which by the way, that's a cool little stadium, Lloyd. You guys have a nice little stadium down there. That's a pretty cool place.
Oh yeah, I gotta share that picture with everybody that you sent. I love that picture. You sent me a really cool picture.
Oh, I can only picture it. I'm sure it's Scotty giving a peace sign somewhere.
Yeah, you know what? It's that, actually, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, wow, it's a family photo. Oh, no, it's not.
Oh, that's funny. That's like, it's like Scott celebrating his 50th anniversary, or his parents' 50th anniversary.
Dude, yesterday I was thinking about like a visual of Scott with a dead goat draped over his shoulder and a shovel, like walking to bury it somewhere in the locker room.
Anyway, I was leaving that stadium, and it was 21-7 at halftime, and I was like, oh man, BYU lost, Utah's gonna lose. Utah State didn't play really well. They found a way to get a win against a winless team, and it's gonna be a lot of gloom and doom on the morning after. But bam, Utah scores 28 points in the second half and wins that thing going away 35-21. What a performance, Hans, by that Utah team.
Yeah, all on the backs of that offensive line that they've gotten some things figured out, and they're executing well. You're not seeing the mental errors, the guys sliding to the wrong guy or guys taking steps in wrong directions, picking up wrong guys and run blocking. That bye week, I think, gave them a lot of time to work out some of the problems, and it's like they are a new offensive line. And it's a really new, nice offensive line. And the way it worked, Kump was out again yesterday. So it was Bam Osini. Bam did give up one pressure that led to a strip sack, which was a bad moment in the first half of that game. But other than that, I thought Bam did really good. And the pocket was really clean in the second half. But it was Bam Osini and Braden Daniels at the tackle positions, Laumea and Bills at the guards, and Nick Ford at the center, and they've come a long way. And then the tight ends for the second week in a row. Remember, I did a lot of highlights on those tight ends and their blocking. The tight ends blocked again, big time blocks, and creating lanes for Rising to rush for a touchdown and Tavian Thomas to rush for a touchdown. Those tight ends were spectacular. And all around, just a great blocking performance. I think that is what I attribute most of the 28 points to in the second half.
It was a weird game. So it started off, Arizona State cruises in and scores 7. It was like, okay, the defenses are just trying to fill one another out and figure things out a little bit. And then Utah goes down, does the same thing. Rising was just, he was money. He had these throws that were just on the money. He was making these you know, he's trusting his receivers, and they drive and they score. And then all of a sudden, it was, the difference was, it felt like, one, they weren't able to run the, really able to run the ball, and two, he was overthrowing everybody. He had Theo Howard at one point that was wide open for a touchdown that would have been an easy six, and he overthrew him by about 10 yards. And then the running game was non-existent, and then you don't see Tavian Thomas. Tavian Thomas had like three carries I don't even know if he had three carries the first half, but all of a sudden it's like they finally, it's almost like Witt says, all right, let's take the lid off of him and let's let him run in the second half a little bit more. And they finally start really giving the ball to Tavian Thomas. Like, what, like, you guys tell me, like, did he have another bad week of practice where Tavian Thomas isn't a part of the first half, and then all of a sudden he is a part of the second half? Like, what goes into that?
Well, Frank came on during the Thursday preview show, and he said, we were talking about the running backs, and he said, I don't know what to expect from the running backs. I believe that there's some things going on, and it could be grades. It could be off-field stuff. It could be fumbles in practice. It could be, you know, you're sitting in practice and you're seeing his effort level picking up a blitz. It could be some little simple things where they're trying to really get discipline in that running back meeting room and in that running back core. And maybe they're just focusing on those details, and every little thing adds up. But TJ Pledger, I think, got the start. If I remember right.
Yeah, he had the first. Yep, he had the very first carry. But I think his very first play was a run to him.
We're doing something with discipline and trying to prove a point or something. That's what it feels like to me.
I was watching the game with my dad, and right when I saw like he wasn't getting the ball, I was like, "Oh, I'm right." I said, "Tavian Thomas must have had a bad practice." And he's like, "Well, why do you say that?" I'm like, "He's not playing really right now."
But he ended up with 20 carries and the bulk of the rushing yards.
Right.
Yeah, 20, 84, and a score. TJ Pledger had that last touchdown that really put it away, that made it 35-21. But Pledger was 7 carries, Rising with 6 carries and 59 yards. But yeah, that's it. Those are your two running backs right there, 20 to Thomas and 7 to Pledger. So. Those guys those are your two running backs in this game. And it'll be interesting to see what happens next game. I mean, do you give it to Thomas and give him another 20, 25 carries? Do you start him or do you continue to kind of work him back into the lineup? I don't know. If I'm Tavian Thomas, I'm like, look, last two games, you've been giving it to me 20 plus, and I've produced. I'm assuming he didn't put it on the turf. Again, I have not watched this game. I'll watch it.
He didn't.
And
nope, he was clean.
So I got two consecutive games of some pretty clean play. It's time to, I'm sure he's like, all right, let me go. Let me out of whatever doghouse I'm in and let's give me the start and let's do this thing.
Pockets seem cleaner when he's in too, doesn't it, Lloyd?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It seems cleaner. And watching him run, because he runs with two hands on the football for the most part. Like, I don't ever see him run without is basically just cradling that ball with arms just draped around it. And how about, by the way, like, how impressive were they in that second half to have 28 unanswered points, to have like that defense one shut down Daniels and Arizona State, and that offense, they were 4 for 4. They only touched. Think about that. They touched the ball 4 times, and they had 4 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
And they were long drives.
They were systematic drives, and there were some adjustments. There were a lot of traps just cross center, and a lot of pulls and counter traps and those types of things. And backs were cutting off it really well. But I was comparing it to an assembly line, where it was like everybody was just doing their job in this line, and everybody was blocked up, manned up, and everything was cranking. And that was really against a really good Arizona State team too. It's not a chump team. It's a good team. And everybody was blocked up. And it was systematic dismantling of Arizona State's defense in the second half. The first two drives out of the gates, Scotty, out of the second half or out of halftime,
yeah.
The first two drives were as clean and executed and chop-chop. They weren't like huge plays that, you know, were a trick play or gadget play. It was just power, 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 throw, throw, power, and just right down the field, back-to-back drives, and it was impressive. And it set the tone for the second half. And in between those two drives, I think it was a three and out for Arizona State's offense. So, which, by the way, we haven't talked enough about Utah's defense. Devin Lloyd with two sacks. This team, I think, had five sacks. And Karini Reed didn't get attributed a sack that he had. I thought it was a sack. It was at least at the line of scrimmage. And so Devin Lloyd was very active. Karini Reed was very good again. And Utah's defensive line started stopping up that Arizona State run game. I don't know if you got the box score in front of you, but how many rushing yards did Arizona State have?
Well, they had 148, which I think actually is pretty good. White had 9 carries for 56, so he did some damage. Let's see.
But that's a team that averaged 220 yards.
Yeah, 46. And then they're gonna give Jane Daniels 14 carries for 32 yards. But remember, 25 of those came, I think, on that either the final drive or the last second to last drive. He had a 25-yard run. But if he doesn't get that, he's 13 carries for, you know, he's got a negative average. I mean, he's 13 carries for 7 yards before that 25-yard run. So that's right there with what BYU, and you mentioned they've got to bottle him up like BYU did. And outside of that meaningless garbage yardage 25-yard run, they did exactly that. Jane Daniels didn't hurt him in the run game.
Agreed. It was really a great defensive performance across the board. I was impressed. They did exactly what they needed to do. They were physical and got some one-on-one pressures from their defensive line. Mika Tafua, I don't think he ended up with a sack. He had a couple of D tackles. I think Tafuna had a sack. Putata had a sack. But Mika Tafua was all over the place. He was forcing pressures and doing his thing as well.
Well, his pressure late allowed Tafuna to get that first sack on that final drive where they pretty much ended Arizona State. So Tafua, you know, Mika caused all the problems, and then Tafuna comes up and cleans it up with the sack. So he gets credited with the sack, but that was all Mika Tafua on that play.
Yep, agreed.
And if I'm Jaden Daniels, by the way, I tell everyone and the coaching staff, I tell every one of those receivers to walk home. They actually, they did not help them at all. They had 5 drama. Like, I tell them, you walk your ass home. Like, what the hell? They did not help them at all. That poor guy, he was scrambling for his life a lot of the night because the second half anyways, they were putting a lot of pressure on him. And his guys couldn't catch the ball to save their life.
Hey, can we try to keep it clean, Lloyd? Jeez, man.
Oh, come on. Don't judge me right now. You just came from Cincinnati. Come on.
Hey, and by the way, I could see those Arizona State receivers walking home and passing a field goal kicker walking the other direction back to Utah. Like, oh, man. Scotty, that Utah State game was crazy, buddy. I mean, there were a couple of missed field goals. One that was blocked, I think.
Three misses officially, one block, and then two just flat out misses. Another, they had three empty possessions, I believe, in the red zone again.
Wow.
It was,
that's brutal.
Yeah. There's games that you say, well, there's no such thing as an ugly win. And I still believe that's true, but if there's an ugly win, that's it, man. That was
yeah, but that drive to go take the lead was awesome. You know, what was it? Just a couple minutes left or less than a minute left. No, it was like 40 seconds left when he ran that in for a touchdown, wasn't
it? Yeah, 35 seconds when he gets it. Helele and Noah with the 10 or 11 yard run. But again, it just seems like Utah State, man, when they have to, they can be ugly all game, but when they've got to get it done and they've got to get stops, they do it. They give up another guy or UNLV, this Charles Williams, who's a really just a beast of a running back. Another running back runs for over 200 yards against them, and they're dealing with injuries on the offensive line front, and they're getting pressures. They can't seem to run the ball particularly well. But again, all that gets put away in the final drive, and they're able to go down and get the touchdown. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't clean, but it doesn't matter. Utah State's now 4-2 in that conference, and my goodness, Hans, it was you know, there's some games where I'm like, hey, you need to go do some film study on this one. Take a look at this. I don't know if you really should take a look at the film study on this one. I'd say focus on Utah. Let's give Utah some love. Let's figure out what's happened to BYU. And then just kind of, you know, put that Utah State game up on a shelf.
It was that ugly, huh?
That's a good question. It's like, what do you do with a game like that? Because there's so many things that you can look at and say, ooh, that wasn't good or this wasn't good. But then at the end of the day, they do what they need to do to win. And UNLV, man, they'd come off a bye week. Their coach had just been like, okay, you know what? It's a new season. And you could tell that there was a vibe around that team. Like, it ends tonight. Like, this ends. This coach from, he was the OC at Oregon. He's been there for 2 years. They didn't win a game in COVID. They started out the season 0-5, but you could tell based on scores that they were getting better. Like, they were starting to figure some things out. They got a bunch of guys back off the bye week, and they threw some stuff at Utah State that I don't think they're particularly ready for. And they were there, and you could tell in that stadium, they felt like, all right, this is going to be the game. We're going to snap this streak tonight. And Utah State puts all that aside and finds a way to win. It's impressive. And then also you want to, it's like when your kid doesn't study for a test and then he ends up getting an A on the test and you're like, good job, but don't do that again. You know, you're like,
yeah,
you're glad that they got the win, but you also are like, hey, you know what? You can't do that again, or you're going to be in trouble.
At some point, Utah State just needs to come out and dominate it,
yeah,
from start to finish, and show that they're a better team and a complete team. And I thought they'd do that against UNLV. But the Mountain West Conference right now is kind of turning into the Pac-12, where you don't know what's up and what's down. Air Force goes and gets a win against Boise State, and it kind of turns things on its head a little bit. Now Utah State, they advance. They get another conference win. And it feels like things are just up in the air right now for the Mountain West Conference.
Well, Utah State, that win against Air Force looks really good right now, because Air Force only has the one loss in the conference. Utah State only has the one loss in the conference, but Utah State has the tiebreaker now with that win against Air Force. And, you know, they don't have the tiebreaker against Boise, but Boise now has two losses, and they still haven't played San Diego State and Fresno State yet. Utah State, if they beat Colorado State this weekend, they're going to be right there. I mean, they've got every opportunity to win that division and every opportunity to go to the conference championship game. So
I thought San Jose State might get San Diego State yesterday.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Was close.
Double overtime if the guy could kick a field goal.
yeah.
But it was fun. Lloyd, I do have one thing I'm bringing back for you from that stadium.
Oh, cool. I can lose. Oh, nice.
Other than the family picture?
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
So I'm watching that Utah State game. So on Friday, Alema and Mac, they both predict 3-0 for the in-state schools. And me and Jake, we both predicted 2-1, thinking the one for sure win is Utah State. And it's between Utah and BYU. We figured one of those teams was going to lose. Wasn't quite sure. But then I'm watching that Utah State game. I'm like, oh my gosh, they're going to lose. There might be an 0-3. It might be 0-3 in the state.
Hey, Scotty, did Calvin Tyler, did he come back in the game?
Yeah.
Or,
Yeah, I know he came back.
Okay, good.
You can tell he's a little banged up. You can tell that he's struggling a little bit, but yeah, he came back in that game and he played. Noah was the guy that ended up scoring the touchdown. It was interesting, and I know a lot of Aggie fans are a little fired up about it, but so Devin Tompkins goes out and he has 12 catches for 180 yards and two touchdowns. I mean, this kid is just, he is so special. So he's pushing 1,000 yards receiving, with,
how many games in is that?
6 games into the season. Like he's
good
on,
Lord.
He's on pace for a 1600 yard season right now. He's got, that puts him at 810 yards receiving, 6 touchdowns and, 50 catches. But you could tell throughout the game, especially in the second half, they're like, all right, we're going 2 safeties. We're bracketing everything he does. We're not going to let him get loose. So they only have, 4 guys in the box, and Utah State's trying to run the ball. And, whether it's 1st and 10, 2nd and 10, even 3rd and long, they're doing a lot of delayed draws. They're trying to run the football. And because the numbers say they should run the football, just based on what's in the box and what the defense is giving you. Problem is there's injuries on that offensive line, and UNLV actually has a pretty good D line. And those guys were shedding blocks, and Utah State had a hard time running the football. And so you could tell there's some murmuring going on, like, why are you running the football? But the math says that you should run the football just based on the alignment and what the defense is giving you. And we talked to Coach a little bit about it, but they had, I think, 46 carries. Now, they did bust off a few. They were over 100 yards rushing, but they only had, I think they had like 17 carries for 21 yards in the first half. But it's kind of always interesting because, your average fan sits at home and is like, what the hell are you doing, man? Let's go. Throw the football. It's 3rd and 7. Why are you running the football? But the alignment is such that it says you should run the football. So I'm always kind of curious, Hans, as a guy that's a big X's and O's, where you try to figure out, how to attack a defense in situations like that.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? But what it comes back to is, in my opinion, what it comes back to is in the fourth quarter when the game is on the line, being able to attack that defense in the areas that they felt like they had capabilities to attack in, and that final drive tells me a lot about what their preparation was. Not only their conditioning, but also their scheme preparation. Because a lot of times in those crunch minutes, that's when the real base shows up. That's when you defensively, you don't take a lot of risks. You've got your base blitz schemes, and you've got your base coverages and your base run stop defense, and you're trying to pick it out on downs and distances. But when Utah State made that push at the back end, in my mind, I thought, okay, well, their scheme was sound. What they were trying to do to UNLV, the whole game was sound. It's just UNLV was playing better. But I still liked what I saw. One thing that bugged me a little bit, Scotty, and maybe you can give me a little bit more insight on this. When I was doing the UNLV breakdown, getting ready for the week, UNLV has zero ability to protect their quarterback. They were giving up nearly 4.5 sacks a game,
yeah, 21,
going into this. And
21 on the season, yeah.
Yeah,
they're like the Bengals of college football.
Yeah, and I thought Utah State, I thought this is the game where you're going to see, Rompachon get a couple of sacks, or Henninger get a couple of sacks, or Justin Rice get in on some blitzes and some sacks, or, if you're going to run a safety or corner blitz and get Shaq Bond or whatever. I just thought that there would be some high sack production, and it kind of bums me out to see them come out of that game with it. Did they have 1, 2?
If it was close to being 2, it was like one of those that you mentioned, or with the Utah game where it was at the line of scrimmage. So I 1 for sure, maybe 2. And a lot of that I think ended up coming down to the fact that it was, they didn't really throw the ball that much. They ran the ball a ton. With this Williams guy. And so there weren't a ton of opportunities. And when they did throw, it was a 3-step drop. It was really get rid of it. Freel was the quarterback. He had 21 attempts in this game, but he was 11 of 21. Everything was out really quick. He had a 5.1 yard pass per attempt. And so, And so they didn't really give him a lot of opportunities. Williams had 27 carries in this game, 31 carries overall. They were really committed to running the football. But, again, a little surprised that they didn't try to light him up a little bit more than they did. I'm with you on that. But still, it was, the defense, when they needed to, found a way to kind of bow up and get the stops they needed to. Yeah, Utah State only one sack on the game. And that came late on the final drive when they knew that UNLV had to throw the football.
I tell you what, you re-ranked that 60 and 60 top 10 right now, and Devin Tompkins might be number one.
Well, Hans, where'd you had him, what, at number four, three or four?
Devin?
Yeah.
It was up there. It was up there.
Yeah, he's definitely in the top. He's definitely in the, you know.
He's got to be top two now.
You're talking on the re-rank?
On the re-rank, yeah.
On the re-rank.
I think I had him two or three on the re-rank. I'll get the re-rank out. And I can't remember. Did I do that week four?
I think you did it last week or the week before.
I might need to go back and look at that again. I'll give you these are some of our college football predictions going into the season. All of us took Utah to end with the best record. You know, that's still on the table, believe it or not.
Yeah, for sure.
Very much on the table. I mean, right now, Utah and BYU have the same record. Actually, BYU's 5-2. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they haven't had a bye yet.
That's right. And Utah's 4-2 with their bye week. But that could still happen. In-state record against Washington State, I had 3-0. Scott had 2-1. Lloyd had 1-2. Right now, it's looking like 3-0. That'll be completed next week.
Next week, yeah.
We'll see.
Washington State showing signs of life. Got a win against Stanford yesterday, right?
No. They are. And BYU's got to go to Pullman. Yeah. And you know how fun that is.
Yeah. That would be a kick in the pills if they were not to pull that one off.
We'll see how they do there. What player has the most rushing yards? Scotty, you took Tavian Thomas. I still think that there is a lot in the air because yesterday Tyler Allgeier was shut down. I know we'll talk about that BYU game. But what's BYU's record against P5 schools? I had them at 5-2. Scotty had him at 4-3. Lloyd's got him at 0-7. Lloyd had him at 3-4. And then this is the one that I wanted to get to and the one I'm embarrassed about.
Yeah.
Does Utah State make it to a bowl game? No, I don't know which one you thought, but does Utah State make it to a bowl game? You and Lloyd said yes. I had him no, and here Utah State is two wins away from being bowl eligible with Hawaii, New Mexico State, New Mexico, Colorado State still on their schedule. I think Utah's not only are they going to be bowl eligible, they may get one of the top three bowls in the Mountain West Conference, which would be unbelievable. I'm really happy for Utah State, buddy. It's fun to see them play. It's fun to see them finish out games. It's frustrating that they gave up whatever it was, 17 points in that first quarter, but it's fun to see them finish out games.
Four wins, all four they trailed by double digits in those games.
Oh, that's ridiculous. That is unacceptable.
They had and by the way, congratulations to Savon Scarver, tying the national record for 7 career kickoff returns. He had the big one yesterday, and so he's got about 6 more games left to try to set that record. But and they kept kicking to him too, which blew me away. But they're at 4-2 on the season. BYU picks up their second loss of the season, back to back. They lose to Boise State, and then welcome to the Big 12. That's big boy football, and Baylor put it on them pretty good.
Baylor put it on them really good. And I guess the biggest issue that the three of us should probably address is BYU's inability to stop that run game. Baylor went for 305 yards or something like that. And everybody wants answers. And in order to answer that, number one, Baylor's very good at running the ball. We talked about that. And remember, if you go back to whatever it was, Wednesday or Thursday, when I made my BYU prediction, I predicted Baylor to win because I felt like Baylor did what Boise State did to BYU, but did it better, or does it better. And that's exactly what they did. They just came out, and Jeff Grimes and that running attack got after that BYU front. So here's a couple of things, observations from this game. BYU's linebackers were just catching the box. Now, you don't have traditional linebackers. You've got really one traditional backer in Will Gar, but then you've got a mix and match. You're bringing safeties, and you're bringing different nickels, and you're bringing smaller bodies in to try to protect, and they only had six in the box, and those guys are just catching blocks. They're not powering through blocks. They're not stuffing blocks. They're just catching blocks. And that's a big problem. And BYU's linebackers have to get better. I talked about finding a way to bring more traditional linebackers in. I know you lost Keenan Pelley. Keenan Pelley would have made a difference in this game. Mm-hmm. We talk about BYU through that Arizona State game. All those first games, Keenan Pelley was there, and he was a big difference maker in stopping the run. And that has been a problem. They don't have a linebacker that can play the run like Keenan did, yet they're trying to install schemes where they're asking safeties and smaller bodies to do some of that run stopping. You can't do that. BYU's defensive line, you guys, they were just one-on-one. They were getting run. And Scotty, I've got a couple of different films I'm going to show you on Monday, and we'll talk a little bit more specifically, but there's one BYU lineman that I've got some respect for, and he just got hemmed up all game, multiple times, just man on, just an offensive tackle, locking him up on the inside of his pads, getting a little bit lower and driving him 5-6 yards. And that was happening. And BYU's defensive line, they were getting cut on the backsides, and they weren't taking on cut blocks well. And Baylor had a really nice chop scheme on some play side runs. And then the poles were blowing up the BYU defensive line. So BYU's D line was getting taken out one-on-one. And then there were missed tackles. There was very little edge support, and there were missed tackles. And Baylor just kind of had the run of the mill, or the run of the house. They could run whatever they wanted. And the scheme was solid, and those guys were just beating BYU one-on-one.
Well, before last week, I think, didn't we decide Jaren Hall had a 300-plus yard passing game? He's now had two straight 300-yard passing games, and they've had two losses. They're not – the offense, I feel like, is just not – it's not who they are.
Yeah.
It's not who they are. Like, they're, who they are is Tyler Allgeier, like, you know, running the ball. And right now he can't run the ball. I mean, you know, he had like a – I think it was like a 2.1, 2.2 average, 15 for 33 yards, the longest being a seven-yarder. And, like, that just – it doesn't – feel like that's who it's not who they are. And yeah, it's great to get those yards and all for Jaren, but they need to find a way to get that run game going.
Well, Baylor took it away from him, and Allgeier ended up with about 2 yards of carry.
Yeah, 15
and
for
only
33
yards.
Yeah,
that's okay. So 15 for 33.
Yeah.
So just and BYU well under 100 yards.
BYU, BYU 24 carries, 67 yards, and that includes Jaren Hall's 56 yarder.
Yeah, geez. Ooh, that is really bad. Baylor did a really good job of taking away. So if you guys remember, I took a little bit of heat for this because BYU started out the season so well, and I talked about the depth being an issue. Not with the full team depth. I feel like there's some depth in some position groups, specifically in targets. And whether you're talking about tight ends or receivers, or even running backs, and you know, looking at the yardage, Scotty, last night I made a note that there wasn't not a single Lopini Katoa carry. And I don't know if that's because Katoa fumbled the week before or what it was. Katoa fumbled twice the week before. Maybe that took some opportunity away from him. But I talked about the lack of depth at the offensive line position. I said you cannot lose a single offensive lineman. And they had two out yesterday. And so you were without Joe Tugoafu and you were without Harris LeChance, and that made a big difference. The pocket was not clean. And look, you've got true freshmen that are trying to step in and give you some reps. And one of them got beat on a one-step slap rip, sorry, a slap swim to the inside that led to a huge sack in a critical moment. And then you had another sack that you gave up based off of an inability to pass off. And Baylor ends up getting five sacks on Jaren Hall in that game. And now it wasn't just five sacks. There were four other quarterback hurries outside of those five sacks and multiple hits and bad pressures. And it wasn't just about the pocket. It was about their inability to set on combo blocks and to get proper backside cuts and everything that Baylor was doing to BYU. BYU's offensive front just could not get going against Baylor. And that was frustrating. To see BYU, to Lloyd's point, I don't care about 300-plus yards for Jaren. That's not this team. That's not how they've won. That's not how they beat Utah. They beat Utah by being out physical in the trench. And they just aren't doing that. And I don't know what the problem. I don't know what the problem is with this offense right now.
Yeah, hard to wrap your brain around it for sure. And it's a little disappointing with all the hype and all the excitement with the way they started the season and now back-to-back losses. And, you know, the Baylor one, you kind of understand. The Boise thing, I just have a hard time with that one just because Boise I don't think is really good this year. But
yeah, they've got four losses now, Boise does.
Yeah, they're what, 3-4 on the season?
Think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, so... The Baylor, I think we looked at this Baylor game like it's going to be the big one, but then you throw in the Boise State back-to-back losses, and now you're definitely going to Shreveport, Louisiana for a bowl game. And
yeah, you are. But I was talking about this in the post game, and I want to get your guys' thoughts. Scotty, you and I and Lloyd, we all went over our remaining season predictions on Friday. And you and I, and I think Lloyd, all agreed that they would lose this Baylor game.
Yep.
What was that, Friday that we did this?
Was it Wednesday? Or Wednesday on the preview show?
Yeah, I think it was on the preview show.
When we were predicting remaining schedules and remaining records. So we predicted that BYU would lose to this Baylor team, but you and I, Scotty, believed that they should run the table after the Baylor game.
Yep.
And I still think that's very much on the table. I think that they could go 5-0 against Pac-12 teams. They should. They should beat Washington State. If they lose to Washington State, then we know that there's something severely wrong. See, I think that their defense fits Washington State way better than it fits Baylor.
That would be catastrophic to the season, don't you think? If they fell to Washington State,
oh yeah,
they make it be three straight losses essentially.
Oh yeah, yeah. It would be horrible for this staff, horrible for this team with the start that they had. It would be terrible. They can still redeem themselves and sneak back into the top 25. My guess is that they're going to be 24, 25, or just outside of the top 25 when the rankings come out today, because it was a pretty good thumping by Baylor. But I think they could still get well into the top 25 and build for something next year. Remember, Scotty, you mentioned there's only three super seniors that are going to be basically forced off this team with eligibility next year. Other than that, everybody's back.
They're too deep. Only has one real senior on it. And that was Puka Nacua, who I believe still has his COVID year available to him.
Yeah. It's wild. Joe Tukuafo has another year of eligibility. Jesus.
He's like BYU's version of Britton Covey.
Celebrate. he's got him by a year.
He's BYU version of Tom Brady. They came in as recruits together. This kid is old.
So what was it like playing with Ty Detmer, Joe? How was that?
Your career spans 8 presidents.
Hey, before we wrap up, tough loss for Jay Hill. I don't know if you had a chance to watch much of that Weber State game. Yeah. Felt bad. That's a team that hasn't lived up to expectations, and their defense kept them in him, give so many opportunities, and they just couldn't get points down the stretch in that one. That was I was watching that up in a Kevin White and I hit a Japanese steakhouse, and we were sitting back watching that game. I'm kidding. We did not watch
it. Oh God, you're the worst.
Yeah, I'm sick for him. I'm sick for Jay because it's frustrating. Where everything built up to have Weber State potentially win the Big Sky, and the Big Sky all of a sudden becomes the juggernaut of FCS, and they still have Eastern Washington.
Yeah,
and Eastern Washington is 7-0. So you play
Montana State, I believe.
Yeah, so you play UC Davis and you lose 17-14. You play Montana State, you lose 13-7, and now you take on the top of the Big Sky division in Eastern Washington coming up next weekend, and I kind of feel like this team is on a tailspin. There's a really good possibility. They're 2-5 after this next week's game against Eastern Washington, and then we'll see how they do against Idaho State and Portland State and Southern Utah. Moving forward, there's some wins on the back end of this schedule, but the damage is already going to be done. And that 13-7 loss, you know, we were excited to see Bronson Barron get back. Bronson Barron had some yards, had some production, but by and large, this team just had multiple mistakes. And yeah, I did. I watched some of it, Scotty. It's really frustrating. And Weber had two critical fumbles in bad moments that put him behind the 8-ball, and that's a tough loss.
I am a little curious. By the way, did you get the hotel with the reviews?
No. No, I tried. I tried. I was shut down really quick. Yeah, because it was only $58 for the night.
See,
and I'm like, man, what, you know.
You get what you wrong. Pay for.
Yeah. You don't want to have to wear a hazmat suit bad.
What could go wrong? A double homicide is what could go wrong.
You don't want to be seeing an imprint of an outline of a body.
I could see walking into the room and being like, oh, sorry, babe. I didn't realize we were supposed to bring our own bed coverings. That just a bare mattress in the middle of the room. Like I could.
She obviously didn't want to get bed bugs. That would have
sucked. I couldn't subject her to it.
Yeah. All right. I think that's it. I think we're done.
We will have next week is going to be a blast on air with us. Come hang out. We're going to be going through our NBA. Typically, it's the Utah Jazz preseason predictions. We'll go through what we expect to see from the Jazz and what we expect to see from the NBA. And we'll be tipping off Jazz basketball on Wednesday, as well as getting you ready for more big games. I mean, see if Utah can continue to roll, because things don't lighten up for Utah. I mean, Utah's got a really tough schedule. Utah State's in a good position. I think BYU's in an okay position. Things continue to get tight for Utah, but it's going to be a fun week, man.
Hey, real quick, and maybe we can hit this on Monday or whatever. Before this, when they went through with the team went through the Aaron Lowe thing, and I was just kind of thinking about this. We said, man, I wouldn't blame this team if they lost the rest of their games.
Correct.
I don't really care what they do from here on out. Has that changed? Because obviously they've responded.
No, because I think that you could still have ebb and flow. I could still see this team having a complete meltdown and letdown and major distraction, even though it does feel like they've galvanized, they've come together. Right. Something happened at halftime in that game against Arizona State, and they all came out and played for each other. I'll see if I can get to the bottom of that and have more insight coming up next week. But
well, I think Whittingham had like a Remember the Titans moment, and he pretty much said, you don't let this team gain another yard, and you make sure they remember the time they played the Utes.
Well, I know, because they only gave up, like, was it 80-something yards in the second half?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
It was impressive.
All right, gentlemen, we'll do it tomorrow. We'll write it, and we'll do it live. Coming up tomorrow, 10 a.m., Hans Olsen, Scott Gerard, Lloyd Cole. You guys got anything on the grill today on the smoker?
Yeah, actually, I do. And I just went back traditional pork butt. I haven't done it in a long time.
I haven't done a pork butt in a long time, too. That's a good one.
I'm doing a sweet and spicy pulled pork. So it's been on the smoker since about 5:30. I've got it at 200 degrees with super smoke on it. And I will take it to 160 internal, Scotty, and then I'll take it off the smoker. I'll throw it in the oven and take it at about 250 up to temperature. But what I'm going to do, I'm going to candy it with some honey and brown sugar.
Yeah, wrap it.
Wrap it and put it in the oven. I'm going to candy it with some honey and brown sugar. And then after I pull it, I'm going to throw some oil on my griddle and pull a bunch of that shredded pork and then throw it on that oil with a little bit of hot sauce, a little spice. So you get that sweet and spicy and that crisp pulled pork.
Yeah, put a little crust on it.
And then we're
going
to put it on tacos.
Yeah, then put it on tacos. I like where your mind's at. I like it.
Lloyd? A little more honey, a little more syrup.
Yep.
Yeah, so I smoked we smoked a ham and smoked some smoked green chili mac and cheese yesterday. So we got a little leftovers. Probably going to go for a nice little drive and check out some of the fall colors.
Is this the Clay Jensen recipe? Mac and cheese? Nice.
Yep. Yep, we did that and smoked some ham, had some baked beans, stuff like that. So, I had a nice little cookout yesterday.
Smart. I like it. All right, gentlemen, I'll see you tomorrow.
All right, buddy. See you guys tomorrow.
All right, buddy.
That's your Morning After podcast. Hans Olsen, Scott Gerard, Lloyd Cole, right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone.